Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome Vic Tipness to the show. Now, Vic is a true success story. He built a multi-million dollar company, lost it all, then started all over again after divorce and only $78 in his bank account. That's a terrible story, but he made it back. So in 2012, he founded Blackstone Medical Services. He had zero revenue. And in the beginning years, he was losing up to $30,000 per month and then almost went bankrupt again twice. So he didn't give up. Through perseverance and persistence, he turned it all around and built Blackstone to an Inc. 5000 company with 325% growth over the last 7 years. So today, Blackstone is a dominant leader in the sleep apnea testing space, and Vic is inspiring and educating business owners, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, and business professionals nationwide. So he is here today to share his story and his tips and advice on how to bulletproof your business. Vic, welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much, Denise. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I read your one sheet, of course, and then we had the pre-call, if you will. And I thought, man, I can't wait to hear this story. So go. Let's get started.
Thank you. Thank you very much. In starting Blackstone, one of the things that I really focused on was really trying to, from the very beginning, thinking with the end in mind, and really just trying to build an organization or a company that was bulletproof. And I think that one different change of viewpoint that I had in the very beginning, as opposed to some entrepreneurs will take the viewpoint of, hey, I just want to make a little bit of money, you know, whatever their goal is, 50,000, 100,000, or whatever the case may be. And I subtly changed it to just, okay, how do I really make this into a Godzilla of a company to where it could withstand any sort of attack or any sort of climate change within the industry to where I would have a very sustainable company.
And why don't most people think like that? I mean, I often catch myself wondering why, if you're going to go into business, look, we work our butts off to go into business. People think, oh, I'm going to create a lifestyle business, and I'm not faulting anybody who wants to have that. But it doesn't start out that way. It's very difficult to start, build, and sustain any kind of new business, whether you're working in your home office, you don't have any employees, you know, other than contract employees. It doesn't matter. You're going to work your family off, and you're going to do it for a long time, more often than not. So back to my question, why don't more people think, or maybe you don't even know, I don't know either, because it's a question I ask myself frequently, but if we're going to build a business, why don't we build a mamma jamma business, build the big one? I guess that's what really puzzles
me. Yeah, no,
me.
It's a great question. And, you know, when I talk all over the country, one of the topics I talk about quite frequently is this scarcity mindset as an entrepreneur or even just as a person in general. We have this idea that there's not enough to go around, that there's just not enough clients or there's not enough money or whatever the case may be. And what tends to happen in a lot of businesses or entrepreneurs is you get into the scarcity mindset from a very small level, and it really just expands. It's quite insidious from the aspect of it. It's just like a germ, and it really infiltrates your life. And an example of that is, you know, you have a business, and you want to get clients, and you start to get, maybe you lose a client or two. Maybe you have five clients or seven clients. Well, losing one client or two when you have five is quite a blow, right? But if you think about it in terms of, okay, if I thought from a bulletproof mentality and I thought from an abundance mentality, well, then I would be focused on getting 100 clients or 200 clients or 300 clients, because then if I lost two or lost seven or lost 10, it wouldn't hurt me as much. It wouldn't create that much of an impact. And I think that's the part that people miss. So for me, for example, when I started out, you know, I landed some pretty big accounts in the very beginning with large groups. And I was like, wow, that's great. But literally the next second, my thought was, okay, how do I get it even bigger to where if I lost that account, it wouldn't affect me? Because if I think with the opposite, then I'm really at a scarcity mindset. I'm really at a fact of thinking and feeling that, wow, you know what? If I lose this client, I'm in trouble. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to build an environment around myself where there was just so much from so many different sources that I was not the effect or at the behest of one client or two clients or 10 clients. And I think that's the part that people miss.
I agree with you. And another thing that I see all the time, I saw it in myself, and every once in a while it will sneak back in, and that's imposter syndrome. It's like, oh, you know, mm-hmm. other people are doing this. I'm not as good, or I'm not going to get them to pay what I know I'm worth. I mean, you can talk yourself into a corner very, very quickly.
Absolutely. And, you know, it starts again on a very small level. You know, maybe you're out there and, you know, you're listening to this podcast and you're starting a business and you're getting off the ground and you're maybe had a few wins. Maybe you had a good month or two and you got some clients and you got money coming in the door. And then one month you maybe have a little bit of a bad month. Well, what typically tends to happen with a lot of entrepreneurs is they contract. They start looking at where can I cut, right? That's the immediate knee-jerk reaction of an entrepreneur is where can I cut? Where can I cut expenses? Well, look, here's the reality. You will never cut your way to profitability, ever. It doesn't work that way. You will never cut expenses to be profitable. You actually have to turn it on its head and say, okay, how do I outproduce this? How much more revenue can I go create to fill the gap? And the worst thing an entrepreneur could do, or anyone could do, is to contract and to say, oh, you know what? I'm not going to go to Starbucks today and get my coffee. Despite what Dave Ramsey tells you, that you're going to save $1 million because you go to Starbucks and you pack your lunch. That's just BS. It doesn't happen. No one. I've yet to meet somebody that saved $1 million. Okay. I've yet to meet that guy. And I meet a lot of people because they didn't go to Starbucks and they packed their lunch. So the point is that if you go into a scarcity mindset and think, oh, you know what? I can't go to Starbucks and get my coffee today. You're thinking the wrong way. You really need to say, right, actually, what can I go do that is going to increase my necessity level to outproduce this? And that's how you turn it around.
Oh, I agree with you. I've seen so many. I work with a lot of people, either building their websites or doing their social media, helping them write their book, whatever it is that they need. My agency does that. And one of the first things they'll say is, oh, gosh, I've got to cut back on advertising. I can't do this. I can't do that. You're going to stop filling your funnel? Really? I mean, that's mm-hmm. I don't understand that kind of thinking. Even if, and I've had this happen too, and I'm sure you've seen it as well, even if your client or the person you're talking with says, oh, no, I'm really doing great. You know, I'm not doing any advertising. I'm not getting in touch with my former clients, current client, you know, consumers, whatever. And I just look at them like, you've got to be kidding me. So you're just going to drop mm-hmm. off their radar, and then when you're desperate, you're going to pop back up. They've moved on, trust me. So let's talk a bit about mm-hmm. that, because I think that's a terrible idea to just get comfortable and say, oh, I'm really doing great. Mm-hmm. These guys love me. They're not going to leave. Oh, crap. Now what? So if you can, talk a bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you get into this scarcity mindset, you get into that it's not enough. And it is a very, you know, it's a very common thing. I mean, it's not abnormal to see that. And it takes quite a bit of confront to say, okay, you know what, I'm going to go and outproduce this thing. And I've been in many situations, and I'm constantly in that situation where I'm trying to expand, I'm trying to do something big, right? And look, you're never going to do anything big in life without creating havoc and destruction. It's just going to happen. It's a byproduct. You know, you want to double and triple your business, there's going to be chaos. And shit's going to happen. And you're going to have to rise to the occasion on good weeks or bad weeks when things aren't going your way. And the physical universe is going to test you. And it's going to say, do you really want it? And if you're not willing to step up to the plate and outproduce it, outcreate it, you're not going to get to where you want to be. You know, it's just not going to happen. So when I talk all across the country, it's one of the things I really get on people about is, look, don't shrink, don't contract. You've got to expand. It's the only way to profitability. It's the only way to survival is create something so big that hiccups don't affect you.
And they're going to happen. They really are. Before we get too far into this, I want you to tell people a bit about your story, because you have truly a fascinating success story. I mean, to lose it all, multi-million dollar company, lose it all, have a divorce and $78 in your bank, ow.
Yeah, you know, I had my first company when I was about 24 years old, and it was about 20 years ago that I started, made every entrepreneurial mistake you could imagine, took on too many partners, had too much debt, too many personal guarantees. I mean, it was literally textbook in terms of the errors I made. And, you know, I learned from it, which was great. I ended up selling the company for a profit, but I didn't walk away with a ton of money. I made maybe about $100,000 or so after taxes, which, you know, wasn't going to make me financially independent. You know, it's not like the 1920s when you had $100,000. And, you know, I found myself back in the workforce again, and I was working for the company that had bought me out. And, you know, I was making decent money, but it wasn't what I wanted to do. And ultimately, I'm one of those entrepreneurs that never really wanted to start a company because I wanted to just make a lot of money. I genuinely wanted to have a company just because I didn't want somebody telling me what to do. And that was just really it. I wanted to have the freedom to come and go as I needed, to do what I wanted to do. And I would be happy even if I was making $50,000 a year as an entrepreneur. I genuinely would be happy.
I did the same. So I had the same attitude. I did not want to work for somebody else. I'm an introvert. I run with scissors. I don't play well with others. I don't want to be in somebody's business or office. So I did the same thing and made all the mistakes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm hearing, you know, your story, because I did all the same thing, and I look back now and go, oh, geez, how did you not know? But you don't know what you don't know. And that's why, you know, I talk with people like you and get you to share your stories, because some of us are going, oh, I'm in the middle of doing that. Oh, geez. So keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no problem. And it's great you said that. So that actually kind of flowed into my story, actually, because after I had sold the company, the gentleman that bought me out, who was very successful, and I'm actually very good friends with today, I was on his plane because we had meetings in Florida and New York, because we had now combined the companies. And I remember being on his plane sitting next to him, and I had this overwhelming thought of, okay, why is this not my plane? What did he know that I didn't know, right? And it's that old saying of, you don't know what you don't know. Because it wasn't that I was a person that had a lack of ambition, a lack of drive, a lack of persistence. I had all those raw materials. I knew it. But I didn't know what I didn't know, right? And so I became almost obsessed with this concept of learning and understanding what it was that I didn't know. And I just really threw myself into learning over the next 5 years at that point to just really kind of understand, where did I go wrong? How do I prevent it from happening again? I knew I was going to start another company. I didn't know what. I just knew that I wanted to start another healthcare company because I love the healthcare space, and that I wanted to find something that allowed me to have endless scalability in terms of, I didn't want to be limited by location or space or time or any of those things. And so it was just a journey of then figuring out what that particular thing was that I was going to do. So that, you know, the business of Blackstone and how it came around was, you know, I already knew before I got into the sleep industry that I wanted to be in a business where I could help a lot of people and I could do it nationally, if not globally. And that was my ultimate goal. And then after that, and I'm a big believer in this, you know, once you put that idea there, it does manifest. And so shortly after me deciding that this was my ultimate goal, did I then get an email from a friend of mine about a home sleep testing device. And I thought, I could build a business around this. And literally that's how it started. And I started Googling manufacturers. I found a manufacturer for the device that I liked, called the manufacturer, found the rep, met him at Panera Bread. And I literally pitched the idea and said, hey, and I actually still am friends with this guy today. And I said, hey, Mark, I have this idea. I want to be the largest home sleep testing provider in the country. This was when not a lot of people knew what sleep apnea or that you could even be tested in your home was an option. And he was like, okay. He probably thought I was crazy. Actually, he did tell me, I thought you were a little crazy. I thought, yeah, I've heard this before. You know, a lot of people have gotten into this space and failed. But he said, sure, I'll give you some product and see what you can do. And I literally started with two or three devices out of my kitchen. I was a sales rep, and I went knocking on doors and tried to drum up business. And that's literally how I got started. So, you know, it's interesting because I wasn't this guy that was like, okay, I have to do exactly this product or service. I just had a general idea about that I wanted to do something in this space. And then it just came about that way.
And see, what I love about this story is that you're able to look at something, see a potential need for it. You're probably a bit ahead of the curve from the sounds of it. But you didn't have to create anything other than a way to share these devices and become apparently one of their biggest partners or salespeople. And what you've done is take somebody else's idea, device, and just run with it. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, you know, there's two types of entrepreneurs, and that's what I talk about a lot. You know, you have to, as an entrepreneur, first find out what type of entrepreneur are you? Are you an inventor of things, or are you somebody that takes something and makes it better, right? So if you look at Steve Jobs and you look at Elon Musk, you know, Steve Jobs was not an inventor. He wasn't an engineer. He wasn't a coder. He wasn't a design guy. But he knew and had the skills and the vision to say, hey, I can take something as simple as a phone or even downloading music, because he didn't invent MP3 technology. He didn't invent streaming. He didn't invent any of those things. But he was able to take a problem and say, you know what? I can make it better. I can make the solution better, right? Elon Musk did the same thing. He didn't invent Tesla. Tesla was already a company that was existing. He bought it and made it better, right? He took something in banking, made it better. He took something in the rocket industry, made it better. So for me, I consider myself one of those types of entrepreneurs. I'm not an inventor per se, but I can look at something, and I've had this ability for a long time, to where I can look at something, a business concept, and I can say, you know what, it could be better. It really could be better. It could be more efficient. The patient experience or the customer experience could be better. And I've always had that ability to do that. And I think that if you're one of those entrepreneurs, you can figure out which category you fall in. Are you the inventor, or are you somebody that makes it better? So I took a concept that was already existing, and I just made it better. And I was able to turn it into the largest provider in the country, which we are now, the largest provider for home sleep testing in the country, in all 50 states, and take a simple idea, simple concept, and make it better. And I just think there's a lot of value in that, in terms of for an entrepreneur. If you're looking for something to do, you're looking for a business to start, take a concept and find what's wrong with it and what's right with it, but find what's wrong with it. And if you can make it better, do it. You know, I never worry about competitors, because I always tell my team, I'm like, hey, if somebody out there can do it better, then they deserve to be better. They deserve to be the number one. They deserve to be more profitable. We deserve them to be out of business, because that means they figured out how to do it better. That's all it means. And if they figured out how to do it better, that means that the patient is getting a better quality of service. And that's what the patient deserves. If somebody else can provide a better patient experience to the patient, then they deserve to be number one, and we don't. And that's just the mentality. That's just what we have ingrained in our team and the mentality that we have as entrepreneurial company.
I love that. And you mentioned MP3. One of my guests, he's been on twice actually, is Nathan Schulhoff, and he is the godfather. Well, he calls himself the father of the MP3 player. He's the one that brought it out there, and he's got a fascinating story. But you're right, and you know, it's open source. It's not something that he created, but he sure ran with it. We have MP3.
Yeah, Elon Musk,
you know,
did
all
that.
Of that now because Nathan Schulhoff. So, yeah, I completely understand what you're talking about. And I've seen people do it time and time again, and I'll think, okay, that is brilliant. You didn't have to create something. You don't have to have factories. You don't have to have, you know, unions. You've taken something that people really need, and you're getting it in their hands. So It's a business. It's a great way of doing business if you don't have a ton of money, a ton of energy, or, you know, ways to fund something like this. It's a great way to create a new business. I'm really, really happy for you.
Thank you. Yeah, and it makes it a lot easier for somebody else, whether it's a stay-at-home mom or somebody that is wanting to be an entrepreneur and has the DNA for being an entrepreneur. You know, I think that if you look at it from that viewpoint, okay, what business model out there is broken, and try to fix it?
Oh, so many. But, you know, I never thought of that. And I'm actually in the process of working with a client who, well, he's a friend and a client, but we're building something that we are both just so excited about. And I'm not going to tell you what it is right now because it's not ready, but I can't stop thinking about it. I mean, I think it probably feels the way you felt. It's like, this feels right. I can do this. I see what's going on here. There's a huge need for this, and oh my. And we've been talking about it daily, and we get more and more excited by the day. It's like, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. So I suspect you've been there and still are there at some point.
I am. You know, I love what I do. I really, really, really do. And I wake up every day, you know, excited about what I'm doing and what I'm focused on and where we're going. And I love it. I really wouldn't do anything else. I have no thoughts to sell my company or anything like that, because I love what I do. And, you know, what am I going to do if I'm not doing this? I just love the game. I love the process. I love the people. I love, you know, the fact that we help people every single day. And the, you know, and all the challenges that come with growing a company from zero. You know, we have 150, just a little over 150 full-time employees now, and probably have close to 250 by the end of the year. So when you're moving at that pace, there's a lot of excitement, a lot of challenges that happen on a daily basis. You know, 12, 14, 16-hour days are just common. But it's something that I love to do. I'm never trying to find a way to get out of work or looking for the next vacation or whatever it may be. I really enjoy what I do.
Yeah, same here. And, you know, I have found that people – and I've actually consulted with people, said, look, I've got a spreadsheet. I need to do this by then. I need to make this kind of money. I need to sell this many widgets. Unless I can talk them out of that kind of attitude, or, you know, counsel them to have a different thought process about it, I don't wind up working with them long, because they're not thinking about their customers, consumers, clients. they're not really thinking about how can I actually genuinely be of service to, you know, my group of people who need whatever it is that I'm buying. And if you don't have that, if you don't genuinely believe that you can help people and that the money will come, I'm not the person to help you. I mean, you've got to really love what you do and believe in it. If you don't have that, I'm not sure what you have.
Well, you have nothing.
That's kind of what I thought. But I have found that once people go, really, that's not going to work. I mean, I've got this spreadsheet. I've got this business plan. This is what I was told to do. And I'm telling them to do the exact opposite. I'm telling them to find something that they love to do and that they know is actually going to be of benefit to a ton of people. It's not that difficult, but some people just can't get past that. Yeah, I've got a spreadsheet. I've got to do this. I've got to make this much money by, you know, noon, or my wife's going to leave me. And I've heard that one before too.
Uh-huh.
So,
Oh yeah.
Get passionate about. But mostly, what I'm hearing from you, Vic, is find something or do something that genuinely helps other people. It's not just a money making thing. It's genuinely got to
absolutely
help other people.
Yeah, you have to solve a problem, and the bigger the problem you solve, the more success you're going to see.
I agree. Okay, so let's talk a bit about, because I know you talk about, a lot about getting off first base. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really kind of getting on first base. So, you know, what tends to happen is people have an idea. Right. They have a business that they want to start, a concept. And what tends to happen is you kind of sabotage yourself because you get into this thinkingness of, wow, I got to have this and I got to have that and I got to have my website and I got to have this. And what about that? And I got to have all these things. And you really overwhelm yourself. You know, you overwhelm yourself to a point where you become paralyzed and you just don't do anything. You go into inaction on it, right? Inactivity. Now it's just an idea in your head that you talk about, you know, on Sunday afternoon watching the game with your buddies, right? So when I talk about getting on first base to a lot of people that are literally in that kind of, they're in this gray zone of, you know, I want to start a business. I haven't decided to quit my job yet, that sort of thing, or I'm a stay-at-home mom, and you have an idea that you want to pursue. You know, getting on first base is literally just saying, okay, what's the first action step I got to do to just start? You know, how can I just start? And it takes away all the other noise, right? When I started Blackstone, I didn't even have an office. I mean, I start out of my kitchen. I got a business card from Kinko's, and I just started. I didn't have a Blackstone polo. You know, I didn't have a lot of marketing material. My website said under construction, and it wasn't under construction because I didn't have money to pay for the website. But that was all I had, and I had an email address. And that took me like an afternoon to get together. So I could have sat there and paralyzed myself. Said, well, I got to have my spreadsheet. I got to have my business plan and I got to have all this stuff. And instead of doing that, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to hold the bat. I'm going to wait for the ball and I'm just going to swing. And I'm going to hit it. And if I hit it and I get on first base, great. Then I started, and that's how I started. And after I started getting out there, I started getting more information. And then I said, okay, I'm going to go rent an office space. And I just didn't think about all the other factors that go along with it. I said, okay, how much space do I need to be able to get the licensing that I need to, which in Florida, you have some restrictions there. So you have to have a certain square footage. 500 square feet got me by. So you know what? I signed the lease for 12 months, $500 a month. It was a piece of crap office. And it was about the size of somebody's garage, if not smaller, probably half the size of a garage. And that was it. I was in business. And that didn't take that long. And so when I hear people that have an idea that they're sitting on and they're chewing on it for months, you know, sometimes years, I'm just like, you just got to get going.
You do. Yeah, and listen, you know what I was just telling you about this new business that we're creating, my partner and I, we just started talking about this 2 weeks ago. And listen, I immediately went, oh, we need a website. I'm a web developer. I build websites in my sleep, literally. And we talked a bit more. He said, you know, we don't actually need a website right now because he's got customers. I've got customers, clients. We've already sold. We've already got clients. And two or three of them we're going to use as case studies. We're already in business. We don't have anything out there just yet. It's okay. We've started. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about it. We didn't think about it. We didn't put it on a spreadsheet. We just went, oh, my God, we're both so brilliant. Let's do this. And we're so excited about it. Yes, we're going to have to get it straightened out at some point. But right now, we're building, and we've got clients, and we're making money out of it with no further
ado. That's awesome.
So sometimes you just have to go, oh, my gosh, I've got
right.
do this. So, yeah, I completely understand where you went with that.
Yeah, totally. And that's where you have to go with it. You just have to start. You can't procrastinate on it and get into this thinking about what you're going to do and all that stuff. It doesn't work. It really doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. And I call it, you know, paralysis by analysis. The more you think about it, the more you jot things down, the more you go, oh, I can't afford that, or where am I going to find the time, or how am I going to learn this, or how do I find, you know, people to help me with this? And after a while, you're like, ah, I have a headache, and you do. You get a giant headache, and you just quit, which I think is a terrible shame. So you're talking about taking massive action. You just do it, and then you start thinking bigger and bigger and bigger, which I think is just kind of a normal reaction to once it gets in your brain and you're like, oh, geez, I can do this. This is such a terrific idea. And you know in your gut that this genuinely is going to help a lot of people. Then you almost can't set it aside. You're thinking about it. I put things into my subconscious for review just before I go to sleep, and I always get the answer, thank goodness. But you don't stop thinking about it and growing it and building it and talking about it, and after a while, it kind of develops its own set of legs, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. You know, after a certain point, you just get used to it, and you just start really dialing into those things.
Absolutely. Now, you talk also about investing in yourself. What does that look like to you?
Well, you know, I think investing in yourself, for me, and I think for everyone that has, I think they typically have the same conclusion that it's probably the best thing that you can ever do. You know, investing in yourself is probably, for me, it is definitely the reason that I have gotten to where I've gotten to in life. And, you know, what I talk about a lot is, for example, you know, people say, well, what is investing in yourself? So I said, okay, you know, investing in yourself is not necessarily taking yourself to the spa and getting a facial, right? That's not really, I mean, it's a nice luxury to have, but it's not really investing in yourself. You know, investing in yourself, and what I talk about is being able to do something that is going to increase your ability level, right? So let's take, for example, you got a guy that wants to be salesman of the month, and he just has the worst handshake you've ever seen in your life. Right. And we've all experienced somebody that has a horrible handshake, right? It's like, it's the fishy handshake. They kind of give you the ends of their fingers and their hands are clammy and they don't look you in the face. And you're just like, what happened? Right. You want to take a hot shower after you're done. And, you know, but that guy wants to be salesman of the month. And hopefully you're in two situations. Either you have enough self-awareness where you're like, wow, you know what? I can really step up my handshaking game. Or you have somebody that loves you and cares about you and says, hey, you know what? I know you want to be salesman of the month. You talk about it all the time, but I really think your handshake is a handicap and it's something that needs to be addressed. So now, whether if one of those situations occurs, does the person then take the time to invest in a handshake coach? Most of the time people don't, right? And so when I do a lot of speaking, I always ask the audience, I say, hey, Give me a show of hands for everybody that has a budget, a monthly budget, right? Which we all have a monthly budget for our car and our house and groceries and all these other things. Maybe even hair and nails or clothes or whatever. What is the monthly budget for investing in yourself? And there's very few people that raise their hands. Very few. And they start thinking about it and they're like, that's true. I don't have a budget for investing in myself. Is it $50? Is it $100? Is it $1,000? Like what's the budget? And so what tends to happen is you got that guy that's the salesperson and he wants to be salesman of the month and he's not willing to make the investment and hire the right coach, right? And maybe for somebody else it's different. Maybe they're nervous when they speak to crowds, when they do presentations, but the guy's not willing to invest in himself or herself. And so I have invested tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in myself over the last several years. Once that general concept clicked for me that, you know, I don't know what I don't know. The only way I'm going to increase that is if I invest in myself and I hire the right coaches. Maybe it's a speaking coach. Maybe it's a coach to help me communicate better, to help me get my thoughts out because I'm not able to articulate it as good. Whatever the case may be, we all have our things that we know that we should work on. And if you don't know, and if you're somebody that maybe is a little, you know, like not aware of what you think you should work on, it might be a good idea to find somebody that you trust that is successful and say, hey, what do you think I should work on? What do you think I can do better? And hopefully that person can be honest with you and say, hey, you know what? What, you know, you're in this industry. I think actually something could help you is maybe doing this. And then boom, you go try that and do that and see if that gives you a better result. So I just constantly have focused on that on a monthly basis that I'm like, okay, where can I get better? And who can I hire to help me get better at this? And that's what I would do. So when I talk about investing in yourself, that's what I'm specifically meaning. And I know that people that who do invest in themselves at that level are very, very, very successful because there's no better ROI than that.
Well, I agree with you. A friend of mine, Ben Gay III, he wrote The Closers, and you know, he's very, very well known in the sales industry, extremely well known. And in his younger years, I think he was 20, in his early 20s, he actually won the presidency of a company. He did. It was just, and Zig Ziglar was his competitor for this, you know, either whoever won this sales competition was going to become the president of this company. And he was so young, and, you know, he really didn't know, and he'll tell you, I didn't know what I didn't know. So he's sitting in his office one day, and you know, I think the CEO of the company, I can't remember exactly now. He'll probably clobber me for butchering his story. But the door opens, and you know, this guy's here, and he's got this elderly man standing here, and he said, Ben, he said, I know you can do this job. I know you're going to be the best, but I brought you some help, and that help happened to be Napoleon Hill. They hired Napoleon Hill to mentor him, and he is now, Ben Gay is actually the last protege of Napoleon Hill. He's very successful.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm telling you that story because it's such a terrific story. But I've done the same. I mean, I invest heavily in courses, in mentors, in coaches because I don't know what I don't know. And I'm smart enough to know that.
Well, that's amazing because unfortunately, it really pains me. Most people don't get that, and I see their lives destroyed. Literally, their lives just are in shambles because they don't get to where they want to get to in life because they're just not willing to take that investment in themselves and fix the part of them that they know they know they need to fix it. And I've seen people lose great positions in my company because of that specific point. And I've seen people that had great potential in life just blow it all because they were just not willing to invest in themselves and change that part or thing that they know they needed to that was stopping them.
Well, you know, when I first started, when I realized that I didn't know what I didn't know, and look, I started my business before the internet was really anywhere near where it is now, and my websites were HTML. I mean, WordPress didn't exist. When that came along, I was like, oh, there is a God. Thank you. But, I mean, I started not, I mean, it wasn't 100 years ago, but it was back when things were a lot more difficult than they are now, way, way, way more difficult. And I didn't know anybody. Nobody knew me. I had to get out there and, you know, get heard, get found. And, well, that was difficult. And one of the biggest things that stopped me from becoming more successful more quickly was the thinking, oh, I can't afford to do that. I can't afford to do that. I don't have the money to do that. I'm paying myself. I'm paying my team. I can't afford to do that. Well, you talk about stupid. That held me back more than anything. And then the secondary thought on top of that would be, I'm already working my fanny off. I'm not going to bed or leaving my office, which happens to be in my home, until 11 o'clock at night. And then I'm back in here at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm killing myself. I'm exhausting myself. Where would I find time to learn anything new? So I very comfortably and efficiently shut myself down. I'm still mad about it.
Wow.
Okay, I'm still ticked.
Yeah, I mean, we've all done it. We've all been victims of that. You know, it does happen. You know, but you hope that you do it less than the norm. You know,
there came a point where I said, "You're killing yourself. You're either going to have to go get a job, which I would rather be hit by a beer truck than work for somebody else. So that was really not going to be an option. It's true. Or I need to find a way to do what I was doing efficiently and carefully and learn as I went. And once I got past my own big roadblock, and it was a massive boulder that I was looking at every day, and it was all me. It was all me going, I can't afford it. I don't have time. When am I going to learn things? I don't like to be told what to do. I mean, I had some interesting conversations with myself. None of them were pleasant, I'm telling you. So, yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, it was ugly. Yeah, I would look at myself and go, Denise, what the hell are you thinking? It's not, I mean, it was bad. And I still do that to some degree, but now I know I'm going to have to invest, and I'm going to have to just make sure that I have earned that investment, that I have earned the ability to make that money and pay it, because otherwise I'm stuck. Truly, I would be stuck, and I don't want to be stuck.
Nobody wants to be stuck.
So we've talked about investing in yourself, and I love that, so thank you for sharing that. But don't you think how you kind of approach things, your attitude contributes to how you're actually working? And I don't mean your attitude towards your customers, your consumers, your employees. Your attitude towards yourself, I think, is probably the biggest thing that people need to work on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's I would probably say, is probably senior to everything else. You know, it's how do you feel about yourself? You know, what's your attitude towards people? What's your attitude towards things? I mean, I've seen people that just have the best attitude, and they're just like, hey, whatever happens, I'm going to handle it and move on. And I'm responsible for everything that's going on in my life, good or bad. And I've seen people that go around life and all they do is point fingers. And all they do is say that everything that's happened to them is everybody else's fault. And they're the victim, and, you know, and that they're not responsible for anything. And the only reason they haven't been able to keep a job is because they haven't found the right boss and the right this and the right that. And look, it's all BS. You know, it's all BS. And the reality is you do control, to a large degree, more than you think, your environment. And your attitude towards yourself and towards your environment is galactic. I mean, if you're talking about Napoleon Hill, perfect example. I've read his book, I don't know, 100 times. The guy who thinks he can and the guy who thinks he can't are both right. And that's the attitude. If you think you're going to be successful, you're going to be successful. If you think you're going to lose, you're going to lose. If you think that you're not going to get the account, you're not going to get the account. If you don't think you're going to find the right husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, you're not. You know, and it starts and ends with that. despite everything else that is senior to everything that's happening. So, you know, I'm a big advocate for making sure that not only myself, but the people that I care about around me are always thinking the right way and feeling the right way as much as I can affect it. You know, I don't allow anybody around me to take a victim approach to things. I tend not to hang out with people that have that type of victim mentality. And I've just noticed that when I started doing that, my life and my well-being also got better because I didn't surround myself with people that thought that way. So I think that the way you think about things and your general attitude towards things and people is huge, because also, you know, things happen in life. I mean, we're not some monk that's meditating on a mountaintop somewhere completely void of everything around him. You know, we're living life every single day, and things happen, and sometimes good, sometimes bad. But if your attitude towards life is, oh my God, this thing happened again, as opposed to something else happened again, but you know what, how can I understand the situation better? You know, maybe let me try to understand the other side. Where is he coming from? Where is she coming from? What's happening with them that's causing this? And I think that when you take that attitude towards things that are happening, man, it's a game changer. Game changer. I mean, you will completely be handling things you never dreamed possible you can handle, because now you'll be looking at things from a completely different viewpoint. Like, why is this happening? Did I do something? Did it happen because I created a situation? Maybe I wasn't as responsible, or maybe that person's going through something. Maybe something happened in their life that, you know, maybe a spouse died or a family member died. You don't know what's going on. And so if you take the time to actually try to understand, wow, you know what? Maybe you've got a little bit more empathy towards the situation, and you can kind of understand, and maybe you won't be a dick about something all the time. So that's my viewpoint on that.
I think that, you know, we hear a lot about IQ and EQ, and I am firmly in the EQ, you know, emotional intelligence camp, or however you say it. You know, it's, I'm losing my marbles here. I'm listening and go, ooh, I have to write that down. But IQ is important. There's no question about it. And you do have to have some business sense if you're going to become a business person. But you also have to have a great deal of empathy. That doesn't mean, oh, sure, you can have your next 3 months salary today. Sure, you know, let me write that out for you. But you have to stop and be aware, first of all, that there's something going on in your business. And half the time it is you. I find it's like, oh, geez, what have I done this time? You can't get mad at somebody, you know, contract employee or real employee, without stopping first and checking yourself. And then if you're sure it wasn't you, then you can sit down and say, okay, what's going on? How can I help you? But a lot of people
totally
don't
agree.
Do that. They're too busy. And you have to have empathy, and you have to have that personal growth mindset for yourself and for the people that work around you, with you, that you work for. If you don't have that, I'm not sure really how much value you're providing.
It's very true.
Okay, so let's talk about selling, because I hate selling. Hate. One of the worst things I thought I ever heard, when I was pretty young, and I remember being around a bunch of old farmers, and they were talking, I was chatting with them because I'm an introvert, but I'm not shy. And this one very elderly farmer said, Sonny, you know, you are one of the best natural salespeople I've ever met. I wanted to cry on the spot. I thought he was insulting me, and he wasn't. But then, you know, anytime I would do like a skills assessment, people say, oh, you make a good insurance person. No, I would not. Because I can't sell stuff. It has to be something that I really, really believe in. Sounds like you're the same way.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, unfortunately, and you may disagree or not, but unfortunately, you're selling every day. Everyone is selling
something. I finally figured that out. Yeah, and it took me years.
You're always selling.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I had apologize to him, even though he's long deceased. I'm still saying, I'm so sorry. I thought he was a moron. I really did.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. And, you know, the thing is what people, I think what has happened is sales has in generally gotten a bad name and a bad reputation because people don't understand what sales is, right? And what have people have unfortunately been exposed to is the used car salesman approach where like you go into a department store and you're just there to look around and all of a sudden you're bombarded with, hey, let me tell you about this refrigerator and it makes ice. And you're just like, look, I don't really care about the ice it makes. I'm not here for a refrigerator. Right. And what that actually is, it's called pitching, right? It's like somebody throwing a baseball at you, hoping it's going to hit. Right. But that's not sales. What sales is just agreement. Right. The basis of all sales is agreement. No sale can ever happen without agreement. Friendship is a sort of a sale. Two people getting together, a spouse, it's a sale. It's an agreement, right? It means that you agree and I agree. And so now we have now created an exchange, right? And so if you look at it from that viewpoint, and you say, okay, so now you have I have a product or service I'm selling, which is what? Home sleep testing. I know that if you get tested for sleep apnea, if you have symptoms that indicate you have it, you get tested, I can save your life. I can get behind that. So I can talk about that. I'm willing to call a patient and say, hey, your doctor prescribed this test. It's super important that you do it. What are you dealing with right now? And they say, well, you know, I'm snoring heavily at night. My wife has me sleeping on the couch. Okay, well, that's not great. Well, you know, how much are you enjoying that? I'm not enjoying that. Okay, so what else is happening with you? Well, you know, I'm tired during the day and I don't have energy when I come home from work to play with my kids. And I had two toddlers, you know, 11 and, you know, 8. Okay, so what do you want to do about it? Well, you know, I think I need to get tested. Okay. So we're in agreement. We're in agreement that if you do nothing, it's going to get worse. And we're in agreement that if you have it and you get the proper therapy, you're going to not be sleeping on the couch and you're able to have more energy to be able to play with your kids when you come home. So we just created an agreement and that didn't hurt. You know, I wasn't calling, talking to him about something that was not important, trying to sell him an ice maker. You know, that's pitching. So everyone is always selling, whether they like it or not. They say, oh, I like sales, don't like sales. You're always selling. You're selling yourself. You're selling your service every single day from the minute you wake up in the morning. And all that means is that you're trying to get agreement with people that have a like mind. And that can agree on that particular thing that you're discussing.
And see, I hadn't heard it in that way, that it's an agreement. That makes perfect sense. Let me tell you what happened yesterday, which is the complete and exact opposite. And I was actually surprised and frankly appalled, but I made a phone call to I need foundation repair probably, and I want somebody to come out and look at it. And the woman on the phone, I don't know who trained her, but oh my gosh. And I was very clear when I introduced myself and I said, you know, I'm looking for information. I'm not ready to do anything yet. It'll probably be 2 or 3 months down the road. I'm just gathering information. I was very clear about that because I don't like to let people think, oh, we're going to make an appointment. We're going to get money tomorrow. That's not right.
Mm-hmm.
This poor woman, I mean, she battered me. She says, well, what's your full name? What's your email address? Well, I can put you on the books and we can call you in a couple of weeks. I said, no, it's going to be about 3 months. Yeah, well, I can have my guy call you. And she just went on. And finally, I just said, stop. Just stop. I mean, I really almost had to yell at her, stop it.
Yeah.
I mean, everything she could think of, she did. And I will not be going back to that company. I will not.
Yeah, well, she wasn't trying to get an agreement with you, was she?
No.
Yeah, she wasn't trying to get an agreement. It was pitching. It was not, hey, let's discuss what the common issue is.
And she was unrelenting about it. And I'm also catching myself wonder if I should contact that company and tell them why I won't be coming back. I don't know if they know she's doing this, or if they do know it, they need to maybe rethink their approach.
Yeah, well, you know, here's a perfect example of why sales gets a bad name, because what she's doing is actually not sales. What she's doing is pitching. She's just throwing something at you and hoping that you're going to have some agreement with it when you don't. And you're like, look, I don't have agreement with it. So it's similar to walking into the mall and somebody's trying to sell you a refrigerator. And you're just like, I'm not interested in refrigerator. We have sales today on refrigerators. And I don't care. You know, we have sales today on washers. I don't care. What if the person just says, hey, sir, what are you here looking for something today? Yeah, you know, I'm actually looking for a pair of sneakers. Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I've got a sale going on sneakers. You interested? Yeah, let me come look. You see how that changed?
Exactly. Exactly. And she was not going to give up. She was going to get my phone number. She was going to get something. She finally said, well, you can go to our website and chat with us there. I said, why would I do that? I've already told you no 13 times. I mean, and honestly, she probably batters people into agreeing with her, which I think is just wrong. It's just wrong. Mm-hmm. Me, I'm pig-headed. Mm-hmm. You're not going to tell me to do anything. So she, and I don't think she quite figured that out. Bless her, until I said,
no,
stop.
Obviously not.
Just stop. But it was interesting. So do you have any stories about things that have happened in your company that you're really, really proud of?
I mean, there's many things. I think that what I'm most proud of is just, you know, I have some core people in my team that really, really work very hard. You know, we have a great group, because when you're a growing company and, you know, you're doing something that hasn't been done before, you know, we're doing something that not many companies have even done. And so when you're doing something like that, that you can't necessarily go and copy somebody else, I think that that's something to be very proud of. And we've just done an amazing job at doing and handling the growth of the business and making sure that we're staying on focus and working hard every single day. And I'm just really, really proud of what we've done for that. You know, it's not easy. It's a lot of work, takes a lot of attention, a lot of care. And I think that's the core part of it. You know, the essence of management is caring about what's going on. And if you care enough about what's going on, you're willing to work the extra hours. You're willing to have the extra conversations. You're willing to go beyond the average and really make sure that things get done and handled properly. So there's many, many, many things. I would just say that that's probably the thing I'm most proud of, not only with myself, but with my team, that we have consistently been able to handle any sort of challenge that has come our way.
Excellent. Listen, where can people find you on the web before I let you go?
So I'm all over the web. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. My handle is my first and last name, Vic Tipness, V-I-C-K-T-I-P-N-E-S, Blackstone Medical Services. And please reach out. I'm always engaged on social media. So if you're an entrepreneur, aspiring entrepreneur, have a question, please message me on Instagram. I usually will respond within 20 to 48 hours to every comment that somebody's asking me for advice. So please feel free to reach out.
Great. Vic, thank you so much. It's been wonderful speaking with you. And I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice. And I mean, you should have seen me scribbling things down. I was like, oh, that's good, that's good, that's good. So thank you so much. And before we
thank
say
you,
goodbye,
Denise, so much for having me on.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes and anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Thank you.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.